From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at the LDR Char Pit in Rochester. The historic food joint provided the first official term of employment for a young man who had lived in the foster system. 14-year-old Tony Michike saw the value of work, and now, as a county legislator, he says that is just one of the experiences that helped set him on a path to help the city he loves. Michike is the Republican running for mayor of Rochester, and he believes his own life experience makes him uniquely qualified for the job. Now, a lot has happened this summer with questions swirling about big downtown development projects, the anti-poverty initiative, and more. We're holding several rounds of interviews with the candidates for mayor, and this is our second opportunity to sit down with the Republican at length. Tony Michike, welcome back to the program. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Evans. Nice to see you, too.
So you've been out there, you said, 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours a day, door-to-door with voters?
Absolutely. I'm meeting all kinds of people with different problems, different areas, and it still all boils down to public safety and mostly the bad schools. I sit and talk with people, sometimes 10, 15 minutes at length, and it just comes down to that. They don't feel safe. They don't feel that their kids are getting a good education, which they're not. This is the second worst school district in the country behind Detroit. This is not acceptable. So I propose 49 solutions that is on my website, tonyformayor.org, and you can look those up. And I tell everyone, if you agree with 75% of what I put out, I hit a home run because no one agrees 100%. And it seems to be going over well. I'm getting good reception from just about everybody and everywhere I go.
All right. So when you talk to voters, you say public safety, schools come up more than anything else.
Yes.
That's what's coming up more often.
And jobs.
Okay. Public safety, schools, jobs. When it comes to, let's start with public safety. What are the big complaints about public safety? You say that they want to feel safe. Do you think people who live in Rochester are safe?
Well, it depends on the neighborhood. If you go over in the Winton Road, Merchants Road area, most people feel pretty safe. If you go over to the Avenue D, Thurston Road, Otis Street, not really. So it depends on where you are.
Okay. And what do you think sets apart neighborhoods that are not safe?
Well, mostly the poverty. It's really high, but I think, to me, the poverty is there in part because the schools are so bad that they don't have any capability of teaching job skills. Their educational level is so low that some of them have a diploma that they could barely read. And again, this just is not acceptable. Case in point, I saw where it was like 9 to 12% of African Americans, that boys, that go from kindergarten to actually make it through graduation. That's not good enough. It's when you have a 45% graduation rate total, that includes summer school and social promotion. Again, I won't pay for failure. East High has U of R there, and their graduation rate is 33%. You're losing 2 out of 3 kids. Those two that you lost don't have the job skills, don't have the intellect, don't have the knowledge to offer a prospective employer. So they tend not to be in good paying jobs, if at all. And sometimes they get into trouble. And I think the focus really has to go to the schools.
When it comes to U of R's partnership with East High, you know, we've heard from Van White, president of the Rochester City School Board. We've heard from Sean Nelms, who is the superintendent at East. And they all tell us a number of things. First of all, they tell us that progress takes time, that you can't, you know, fix everything overnight. But they also tell us that they see East as a kind of success story so far, that it's trending in the right direction. You don't see that?
Well, they've been the ones that have been in charge for 45 years. No one else.
Not the U of R, though.
No, not the U of R, but I'm talking about the Rochester City School District. It's their job to teach our kids. To have to ask the U of R to step in and try to help illustrates their failure.
Okay, and so when it comes to poverty, do you subscribe to the idea that if you want better schools, you have to fix poverty first, or do you fix the schools first?
Got to fix the schools first. That's the real key. Everybody's looking at the poverty that exists, but the poverty's there as a result of the bad schools, the result of overtaxation, overregulation, chasing businesses away, chasing jobs away. You have to look at what the cause was. And a person who has the inability to add and subtract, to read a good book, to understand command, to have a good work ethic, that all comes from schools. So you have to go back to that first.
But Tony, point to a district locally that you think is doing it right. What's an example of a school district that you say, there you go,
well,
doing it like that?
It would be Pittsford. I mean, they have a 98% graduation rate, and you cross that magical line into the city, and it drops in half. What are they doing better than our school district?
What are the socioeconomics of families in Pittsford versus the socioeconomics
sure.
of families in Rochester?
They're better off financially, but, you know, when people say poor people can't learn, I was poor.
I don't think anybody has said that.
I have heard that.
So let's set aside. That's a silly argument, right?
Of course.
Of course poor people can
of
learn.
Of course.
But it's a question of, do you have the support to, you know, make sure that you are getting to school, that you are having nutritious food, and that you're ready to learn? So, if you look at Pittsford, what would happen in Rochester if we flipped the populations? In other words, all the Rochester students and their families went to Pittsford schools, and all of the Pittsford families sent their kids to the Rochester schools.
Well, that's a hypothetical. I would think that some of the traits of each group would transcend. Hopefully, they would pick up more of the good ones and lose some of the bad traits. But I've been there. I was in Shalott during a reorganization, and I was an eighth grader, and I'm sitting next to kids that were 16, 17 years old that could not read or write. And it did not help them, but it brought many of us down. We didn't learn hardly anything in eighth grade except how to run and fight. And I remember this quite well, 1971, 72. If you look in the old Times Union, you would see a picture of my coach, Joe Caballero, standing on the front steps as a kid's being taken out in a stretcher. And that was almost an everyday occurrence. So, you know, putting them in a different environment, any kid, may help some, but not all.
What you just described is 45 years old. Do you think that's still the case in many Rochester schools?
Well, I happen to know that last November, a 9-year-old put a teacher in the hospital, and that was at 17 school. Teachers have told me that they've been told they can't report any violence. So I think it's kind of swept under the rug, so people don't know how violent some of these kids could be. There's a reason why there's a resource officer and there's police cars at the schools. It isn't because, you know, they're just joyriding. There's issues there, and they have to be addressed.
Okay, so just to close the loop on this whole thought experiment, if Pittsford families sent their kids to Rochester schools, what do you think the graduation rate would be?
I think it would probably improve. You know, again, it's a hypothetical, but it's really hard to learn when someone's you have someone that's disruptive in a class. If you have someone that is not wanting to learn, and you know, other kids kind of pick up on that, so they're not as focused, and the teachers aren't as focused because they're being disciplinarians.
But what you're describing then is poverty's impact on the school setting, right? Because you said you got to fix the schools before, and that would help fix poverty. But the scenario you're describing is what happens when kids who are raised in difficult circumstances.
You're not going to eliminate poverty. Remember, there was a greater man than myself who said that the poor shall be with you always. However, if you are going to fix poverty, and again, this is coming from someone who was in poverty, who was on his own at 13, it's the education. And if it wasn't for having good teachers like I did at Shalott High, if it wasn't for business people who took me under their wing and mentored me and taught me about business, I probably would not be as successful as I am today. So, I mean, someone had to teach me business skills. Someone had to teach me a good work ethic. My foster father was a drill sergeant, and he was a master sergeant under Patton. He didn't let me get away with anything. But that's exactly what I needed at that age. That gave me my work ethic. That he taught me so much. He prepared me for life. That's what a parent should be doing, is preparing people for life. And when you have a 30% truancy rate in schools, that means parents aren't sending their kids to school.
We have the president of the Rochester City School Board pushing for a military academy school in Rochester. Would you support that?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what's lacking. And bear in mind, I've been a property owner for 27 years. I've had the chance to watch families as they grow up, as they try to raise their children and know what their priorities are. And many, many times I've seen where education is not the priority. Many times they don't even get up till 11, 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and the kid doesn't make it to school. Well, that's another day of education that child lost. That's not acceptable either. That's why I've called for a truancy officer in each quadrant to try to lessen this.
Okay. Talking to Tony Michiquet, who is the Republican running for mayor of the city of Rochester. So in your efforts to fix the schools, what's the number one piece of your platform that you think can work to make the difference that you have not been seeing in the school district?
Well, back in 2009, other candidates are trying to take credit for this, but back in 2009, I said, let's go back to neighborhood schools and neighborhood police precincts. This creates a hub for that neighborhood. So now the teachers get to know all the students. They're not wasting time on buses. And just so you know, we spent over $3 billion on busing since 1972, and we ended up with the worst school district. Obviously, that didn't work. And I can't see doing the same thing over and over and over every year. And, oh, it went up 1% or 0.5%. That's not good. So we need to restructure. And I would personally like to see the school board, and I don't want to be a mayoral control. Let me state that right from the beginning. But I would love to see the school board go back to neighborhood schools, busing for trips or for, disabled children or something, fine. But go back to neighborhood schools, neighborhood police precincts, and allow these kids to have an identity with their neighborhood and not waste their time on buses, but spend their time in special courses or after-school courses, mentoring coming from businesses, things like that.
And do I have it correct that you think the older residents get, the less they should have to pay in school taxes?
No, but I think at age 65, there should be some kind of a phase out, 20% each year till age 70, when you should be relieved of your obligation for school tax. And the reason why I say that is so many seniors decide to leave our area because they can't afford the taxes on their retirement. So to stop that exodus, and really to be fair about it, they probably have been paying for 40, 50 years. You know, I think a little bit of a break in the sunset of their life is not a bad idea. I think that's something that's worth exploring.
Don't you think that strong schools are a benefit to everyone who lives in the community, no matter what age you are?
Of course. Of course.
But if you're over the age of 70, you're not paying school taxes anymore. You're not forced to contribute.
Those seniors aren't paying school taxes here when they move to Florida or Texas. So in order to keep them here so they can stay in their home, we have to look at something, some kind of program like that.
Talking to Tony Michiquet, and you can read all about his platform. It's one of the most detailed that is out there among the candidates for mayor. Your website is what, Tony?
TonyForMayor.org. There's 49 proposals there. And like I say, I don't expect everybody to agree 100%, but I'm a no-nonsense type guy. I'm straightforward, and I believe that's what leadership requires.
Listeners, if you want to call the program and join the conversation, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255, or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Tony, tomorrow on this program, we're going to have Ed Doherty, who has written the reports in the last several years on poverty. Several reports, not just outlining how severe Rochester's poverty is, but how it is for children in poverty, severe poverty, which means people living at half or less than half of the poverty line, underneath the poverty line. And his new report is called Hard Facts. And Doherty writes about how people of color, in particular in Rochester, are faring much, much worse than the national average, that it is not just a situation where it's, you know, it's rough for all citizens. It's in particular sort of breaks down on racial lines. Have you read the report? What do you make of that conclusion?
I have not read the report, but I'll definitely be listening tomorrow.
Okay. And do you, does that make sense to you that there are people in this community that breaks down on racial lines, that people of color are faring worse? Why do you think that would be?
Well, like I said, I haven't read the report. I'd be glad to review it. Poverty in general has gone up every year for the last 3 or 4 years so severely that our current mayor started a poverty initiative, and it still went up. So obviously, whatever we've been doing is not the answer. I'm open to any kind of suggestions on that, but I think going to enterprise zones, regulatory reform, advocating for a content law in Congress as a mayor, these kind of things will help drastically.
Are we too self-segregated as a community?
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, I see that. You know, when I'm walking down Thurston Road, it's primarily African-American. But I've gotten great reception, I mean, because they're looking for solutions, too. They're tired of having to bury their children. They're tired of schools not performing. They're tired of not having good-paying jobs. So they're looking for solutions now. I think this crosses race, even party.
Okay, so you're getting reception in every community you go to.
Absolutely. Sometimes I was a little shocked. I didn't think I would, but so many people have told me, "Geez, I like most of your ideas," and that's all I could really shoot for is most. They have been supportive. I walked down Avenue D a week ago, and people were inviting me in for dinner and ask me if I need a bottle of water. I mean, they were very gracious, very giving, and they were just glad to have somebody listen to them.
All right. So Tony, last time he was here, brought up one of your concerns about the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative, that you think that they have been too closed off. Now, we've heard from a number of people in our community who feel like, I think, shared that concern, I would say. But I will say, I think it's important to review some of those comments, and then we'll see if we can clear up the record here. First, let's listen to what Tony said about the Rochester Monroe Anti-Poverty Initiative in our conversation back in early May.
They create a poverty initiative, $6 million plus, and a poverty goes up. I tried to join that poverty initiative, and I was told, no, we don't need any Republicans on it.
They told you we don't need Republicans.
I did. It's exactly what I heard.
Who told you that?
One of the ladies that was running it, I can't say, but I will tell you there's a business owner who owns 3 McDonald's, and he's a Republican, and he was told the same thing. So, I mean, when you exclude people because of their party or for any reason, that's wrong.
All right. So, I will say, Tony, I think I missed the boat on this. I probably should have pushed you a little bit more because Cheryl DeNolfo, Maggie Brooks, they're Republicans. They've been part of of our MAPI. It to me seemed a strange comment because there have been very prominent Republicans in our city and county who have been central partners. But at this point, let's listen to what some of the leaders of the initiative had to say about that, because maybe I missed something. I did think the comments were strange. Let's hear the exchange we had with Leonard Brock, the executive director of the Anti-Poverty Initiative, and then a couple of the steering committee chairs, Don Braveman, president of Nazareth College, and Dr. Marvin McMichael from Colgate-Rochester-Crozier Divinity School. Let's listen. Leonard, have you ever told a Republican they can't be part because they're Republican?
That's absolutely not true.
I might mention the county executive for a while was co-chairing the committee, so I don't know what this guy's talking. I don't know who the guy is. I don't know what he's talking about.
He's a county legislator. He's the Republican candidate.
With all due respect, then.
He should have known that Cheryl DeNolfo was a central part of the operation.
and I'm sure she's not the only Republican.
Yeah, no.
I found that bizarre, but I thought at least he's the, the Republican Party's candidate for mayor. So Leonard, no validity there.
No validity whatsoever.
Okay, so they're saying, Tony, that we must have missed something because they've got prominent Republicans. Can you clear up that comment?
Yeah. First of all, I don't lie. when they gave me the number to call, I called, and that's what I was told. Another prominent business person, again, I will not name, he was told the exact same thing. Yes, they had Maggie Brooks on. Sure, they got Cheryl. Those are county executives. That's what they want. But people that actually came from poverty, I was denied that. I was told, we don't want you. We don't need any more Republicans. That's a quote. So those people weren't there. They weren't on a phone call. I know I was. I know this other gentleman was. Case closed.
Do you feel there's still exclusion going on in this effort then?
I don't know now because I haven't called or tried to get offer my services, but I'm just telling you from that phone call, okay. That's what was told me.
Okay. So step one for you, if you're mayor of the city of Rochester on reducing anti-poverty, would you keep the you may not have the power to say, hey, tomorrow shut down our MAPI, but would you say that's not something we need or it's not something that's effective? Or would you say, look, I want to become a partner of it. I think we can make this work.
Of course I would want to become a partner. That's what I tried to do. And that was the answer I got. But I'm looking for results. There is so many programs and initiatives and all these things. And the results is the poverty went up. So I'm looking at results, not just window dressing. We have to do something about this. The city's been going down. I warned about it in 2009 that we were becoming a Detroit. We're not too far from it. I was right on the money.
Nancy writes to the program and says, to today's candidate for mayor, please don't refer to the city schools as bad. Having spent 30 plus years in the district, I can tell you that there are many, many dedicated, hardworking teachers and administrators in our district. Teachers today spend countless hours on mental health issues daily before any learning can occur. Bad schools? Really? That's from Nancy.
Well, Nancy, I never said the teachers were bad. I'm saying that the results aren't there. And I don't think anybody can deny that. So we have to look at new and innovative ways to motivate the administration to restructure. I can't let our kids fail another generation like we've been having.
Ray writes to the program and says, to Tony Michike, what are your thoughts on systemic racism in relation to poverty in our city? And did you ever think about your ethnicity in regard to your success breaking through an impoverished school?
I don't think my race had anything to do with how I succeeded, and I don't look at race either. I look at everybody on what is your capability, what is your competency, what's your academics. Race shouldn't matter. For me, it was just hard work. Hard work and people seeing that I was trying hard. Even if I failed at something, with someone say, okay, he's giving it his best, so let's help him out. And I think most people would respond to that, regardless of race.
All right, Tony Michike, my guest for the hour. He is the Republican running for mayor of the city of Rochester. Let's grab Robert calling from Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I understand this RMAPI thing, that they're talking about rebranding RMAPI as something else. They brought in a nonprofit organization called CauseWave Community Partners. That is itself a rebranded operation. It used to be known as the Advertising Council of Rochester to do this. And between this and the fact that this organization has brought an outside consultant in to help them apparently design the structure of the organization, plus you've got two people involved in this who were never involved in the first place, Braveman from Nazareth College and McMichael apparently on some steering committee. This sounds like the world's most top-heavy organization known to man. I'm kind of curious how the mayoral candidate would, what he thinks about these things.
All right, Robert, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Tony.
Could you restate the organization because
The Anti-Poverty Initiative. He thinks it's top-heavy, and just the fact that they're bringing in outside consultants to help design some things, he's saying, he's got questions about not only that decision, but how top-heavy it appears with all the people involved.
I would tend to agree with you, but again, I would have to review their structure, who's involved, what their capability are. I don't want to just make a blanket statement, but from what I've seen, it is top-heavy.
Okay, Robert, you want to follow up there?
They've apparently received $5 to $6 million in taxpayer money to spend against this effort, and there's no indication of where this money has gone. Thoughts on that?
Yeah, accountability is definitely lacking, and so is the transparency. And they actually received another $5 million plus on top of that. So actually, it's closer to $12 million. And I haven't seen any results other than to say, well, it's racism that's doing it. Yeah, is there some racism out there? Of course. But is there also a lack of parenting? Is there also too much regulation and taxation chasing jobs away? I mean, this is like a diamond. It's multifaceted. You have to look at all the causes, not just one, and focus on one issue.
When it comes to racism, whether it's in our community or across the country, I wonder how you feel about what we saw in Charlottesville. And if that kind of demonstration happened here, if we saw a white nationalist demonstration here, what do you think the proper response would be in our community?
Pretty much anybody that believes in Nazism or anything like that, white supremacists, first of all, I would ignore them because they're idiots. But, you know, I would just tell people, ignore them and stay away from them. As long as they were not destructive, let them have their little parade. And then when it's over, and that's that. Then if you want to have a counter parade, go ahead. You know, freedom of speech is for everyone. I don't have to agree with it. But I would just say ignore them. That's probably the best policy. If they're looking for to get a reaction out of people, they're looking for the free press, I wouldn't give it to them.
One of the leaders of the alt-right has said that their movement is driven by a concern that our country is way too lax in policing immigration at the expense of white people, that we are addicted to the idea of diversity while constantly criticizing white people. Do you agree with that idea?
Yeah, I don't know about that, but, you know, sanctuary city policy does violate numerous laws. I would love to see some kind of program where if someone's here and they're undocumented, that we had some kind of a program to at least give them a green card so they don't have to worry about being, I don't know, brought in on, under ICE or anything like that. As long as they're good, productive citizens, I think, you know, that might be a possibility. I would definitely explore that. But to go against a sanctuary city, I mean, you're violating the 1996 Immigration Reform Act, which President Clinton signed, the Democrat president. You're violating Article 4, Section 4 of the United States Constitution to protect the states and the people from any invasion. And you're also violating U.S. Code 1324 or 23, I can't remember exactly, where it's illegal to harbor someone that's undocumented, as well as 1373. You're supposed to cooperate with all law enforcement. So, I mean, it's when I raise my hand to take the oath of office, I have to abide by all laws, whether I agree with them or not. I'm representing the city of Rochester. I have to do my best to abide by every law.
In your section on your website under No Sanctuary City Policy, you write, "I am a rule of law candidate. I will honor my oath of office protecting the people of Rochester. I find it amazing that every other candidate is more willing to protect lawbreakers over our citizens. Maybe they are unaware that in federal prisons alone, there are 25,000 illegal immigrants serving their sentences for murder, 10,000 illegal aliens in New York State prisons. Let me ask all Rochesterians a question. Do you go to sleep at night with your back door wide open? Neither should your country. There is no sanctuary from the law." Does that kind of rhetoric lead to a prejudice against immigrants, Tony?
I don't think so, because it's the truth. You know, I wouldn't go to bed with my door wide open in the back. I don't think our country should. At the same time, abiding by the law, I think that's what we're elected to do. So, yeah, no, I think that's just the God's honest truth.
And when it comes to immigrants in this country, do you think they commit more or fewer crimes than the general population?
I don't have those stats in front of me.
I mean, the numbers show they commit fewer.
Again, I don't have those stats in front of me. I wouldn't want to comment on something I wasn't sure on. But I do know that from the statistics I did see, that 25,000 were in federal prisons for murder. And those are American citizens. I don't, in the Kate Steinle case is probably the classic example. You know, if you've been deported 5-6 times and you keep coming back, you have to do something. I mean, because you're endangering people's lives and you're violating our sovereignty. I don't see anybody breaking into Mexico, because if they do, they're in prison. So, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody, but I definitely want to protect our people. That's the bottom line. When you're a mayor, you're there to protect the people from criminality. You're there to uphold the law. You're there to try to make sure things run smooth and provide people with what they need to make this city grow.
And so do you think our government, whether it's city governments, whatever the level, have been prioritizing immigrants, people here who are undocumented, diversity, and in particular, over the rights of American citizens, over the rights of white people in particular?
I don't know if I could say that, but for me, anybody that breaks the law, you know, you made a choice. The law's being enforced. I don't care about race. I don't care about, you know, your sex or being gay or straight. It doesn't matter. If someone runs a red light, you're endangering everybody else that's running on that street. So I have to protect my people. That's it. Everybody's blood is red.
Tony Michiquet is the Republican candidate for the mayor of Rochester, and he is our guest for the hour. This is our second round of interviews with the candidates for mayor of Rochester. Tony4Mayor.org is the website.
That's correct.
And we're going to take some of your phone calls when we come back from our only break of the hour. And by the way, his website expounds on a lot of what we're talking about. So we won't be able to get to all of the issues, but you can go there and learn a lot more about what Tony would like to do. 844-295-TALK. It's toll free. 844-295-8255 to join the conversation. Coming up in our second hour, those urging a no vote on a constitutional convention for New York State join us in studio. Now, recently you heard of supporters, those who want to see New York voters cast a yes vote for a constitutional convention to open up the state's laws, to make big changes for ethics reform, and a lot more. Well, why do those who oppose it do so? They say they will explain at length next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's get to your phone call. Steve is calling from Penfield. He's on with Tony Michiquet. Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Evan. I wanted to push back a little bit on your guest's statement that he did try to join the anti-poverty initiative. And I will certainly take on face value that he tried, and I'll even take on face value that he got a negative response for joining. As a person in business myself, if I get a no answer on something, I push back. And if I challenge it, if I get the person's name, I take it to somebody else higher up. I don't give up. I if it's important enough to me, I won't give up, and I'll continue to push until I get the desired response. And in this case, there were other Republicans that were part of that initiative. I would have gone to my colleagues and said, hey, I tried to join. This person gave me this answer. I think that's wrong, and I'd like to push back on it, and I still want to be a member. And, you know, if you're going to be a mayor, I don't want to see somebody who makes an effort, gets a negative answer, and then says, oh, well, I tried. So I'll take your comments off the air.
All right, Steve, thanks for the phone call. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi, Steve. Yes, I did do that. I talked to someone that was in the Poverty Initiative that was Republican and asked for their help. And they said that they would try, and I didn't hear anything about it. I inquired again, and they said, oh, yeah, we're looking into it, and that was it. This isn't my only focus in life. You know, I have a business to run. I was putting a campaign together. I'm chairman for public safety for the County Ledge. I'm on law enforcement council. I'm on traffic safety board. I'm a director of 911. You know, I'm on the 333 of the mayor trying to help fix the schools. I mean, there's other things going on other than just this.
All right. Don in Brighton next on the phone. Go ahead, Don.
Hi. After I retired, I went back to school, got a teaching certificate, and I subbed for several years in a suburban school. And I observed one thing. They were talking about that I noticed black students, when I only had one in a class, they worked just as hard or maybe harder than anyone else. But if I had two in the class, the same children who worked hard by themselves, if I had two black children, they would work harder and avoid doing the work than if they did the work in the first place. I feel there's a cultural problem that they don't want to, many of them don't want to be like they're imitating the white people. And it was a really sad experience because the same kid, if he was all by himself, would work really hard.
All right, Don, stay there. I'm not sure I fully understand, but Tony, you want to weigh in first?
Go ahead. I could tell you this. All kids try to get away with a little bit. I mean, it's just the way it is. Yes, there might be a cultural issue here. I'm not a psychiatrist or, able to analyze this. But I will tell you this. When I talk to African-American parents, they want the best for their kids. They want their kids to succeed. They want them to do better than they have done in their lives. So for the most part, most of them care, and most of them really want to push their children to success.
And I have to agree with you. And as I said, the individual would do it, but there's a peer pressure. And it wasn't, if they were by themselves, they worked just as hard or harder than anyone else because they wanted to succeed. But there was a certain peer pressure that I noticed when I had more than one in the class, the same children who worked hard by themselves would not work and caused lots of problems.
Well,
and I think we need to somehow try and get that so there is not that peer pressure, that there is a peer pressure that you want to succeed. You want to do better than the whitey.
Well, one of the things that I came up with.
All right, Don. All right. Go ahead, Tony.
I have a slogan for the kids that, may not be too enthusiastic for school. And what that is, if you're cool, you stay in school. And that's the reason is because without that education, the doors don't open. You have to have more than just a piece of paper on a wall. You have to know something. You have to be able to calculate. You have to be able to read well. You have to be able to read instructions to run a machine or to run an office. And that's a slogan that, the kids kind of laugh and it's kind of corny, but it gets the point across.
Kind of. Have you ever talked to young children about this stuff?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I want to be serious, though, on Don's comment. I will say, as uncomfortable as this phone call might make some people feel, in 2004, Barack Obama was a state senator from Illinois and gave a speech at the Democratic National Convention that launched him to prominence. And one of the lines in that speech was, we have to get past the point where an African-American student with a book is acting white. That is a problem. Don is saying something similar there. I didn't appreciate all the language that he used for it, but Tony, do you think there's a cultural issue?
Maybe in some precincts, but like I said, everywhere I go, the parents who vote, they are very enthusiastic and are glad that someone is finally standing up for them, for their family, for their kids, to push a school district to actually start to teach. And let's not blame the teachers here. The curriculum may not be comprehensive enough. The administration on the school board, I think, is way too top-heavy. I think anything could be improved. I'm just trying to force the school district to restructure and to improve, to save our kids, to save our families, to save Rochester. The parents want what's best.
All right, let me get back to your phone calls. We've got a lot to work through. John and Webster. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Evan. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I didn't like at all what that fellow Don said. It was so, it was bordering on racism, I thought. Secondly, I've been here 5.5 years from Montana, and I've read the papers and listened to shows and everything, and nothing has worked. Poverty has increased every year that I've been here, and they pour more money into new initiatives, and it just gets bigger. I don't think the right things are being done. And that's not to say that I do know what should be done, but there's smarter people than me out there and smarter people than they're using. it's got to do something to turn these things around. Otherwise, Rochester is going to go further downhill. Thank you.
John, thank you. Go ahead, Tony.
I couldn't agree with you more. Elections are about the future. What do you think the future is when you elect the same people from the same party for 4 more years that have been in charge for 45 years? You're going to get the same results. Yeah, they might tweak a little bit. They may steal some of my ideas. But it's pretty much the same results. This is why I'm running. We need some fresh ideas, some new leadership, and quite honestly, some honesty. The God's honest truth. You know, our schools are bad. Let's fix them. Are not all our streets are safe? Let's see what we can do about that. We don't have any jobs here. Where's all the car dealers that used to be on Lake Avenue? They're all gone. Where's Kodak? 80,000 jobs. Gone. General Motors, DuPont, 3M. Gone. You know, obviously what we were doing didn't work. So we need to change gears and try to hopefully change leadership and try to promote Rochester in a different way and help our families and kids. Hopefully the voters will stand up November and say, you know what, here's a guy that he may not have all the answers, but he's at least trying, and he does have some good solutions and ideas. Let's give them a shot instead of the same people we've had for 45 years.
Let's get through as many listener questions as we can, and we're going to try to move quickly. So Vanessa wants to know, when you say ending busing, do you mean the urban-suburban program?
No. I'm talking about someone who lives, say, on Thurston Road, and we're busing them over to Shalott. Why? It's not the building that's bad. It's the administration. It's the school district. Fix the schools. You don't need all this busing. And, you know, I got to say, the Democrats always talk about the environment, but how much fumes are you putting in the air with $3 billion worth of busing we've done for the last 45 years with all the diesel and the gas and all that? You know, it just seems that it's environmentally sound as well as educational.
Okay. Vanessa also wants to know, there's lots of pull yourselves up by the bootstraps rhetoric from Tony, all of which has proven to be more difficult for communities of color. Agree or disagree with that, Tony?
Yeah, there's probably some truth to that. It wouldn't be coming from me, because if you go on my website, you see I have a policy of excellence. I don't care what you are. I care what you can do, what you can build, your academics. I don't think race or sex or anything should come into play other than your capability. So it wouldn't be coming from me.
I think the complaint that some have is that's a really aspirational idea, but it ignores this idea that, well, I don't see color and I treat everyone the same, but society fails to do that and it creates this systemic and structural problem.
Well, you got to start someplace. Why not start with the mayor who sets the example and raises the bar and says, this is not going to be a requirement. I want the best RPD. I want the best engineer, the best architects. That's it.
We have Kelly wants to know. Nope, that's the wrong one here. I'm sorry. Pat emails the program, wants to know, what real independence has Tony shown in the legislature of Monroe County? And have you voted with Democrats in opposition to the GOP before?
Yes, I have. I'm the only Republican legislator that voted against the sheriff raise. And it's not that the sheriff's a bad guy. Not at all. I think he does a good job. I did it because I represent a district that is primarily not well off. And when they're struggling, they're trying to make their mortgage payment and they're working at Tim Hortons or someplace else instead of Kodak or GM, and they're trying to put food on the table, I could not see myself giving that raise. And I was a gentleman about it. I called the sheriff. I explained to him. I said, I have to represent my people first. And that's my job, and I hope you understand. And he totally did.
All right, a couple more quick ones, and then we get back to your phone calls. Alan wants to know, does Tony support the president, and does he think the president is racist?
I don't know what's in his mind or in his heart. I like to think people of that level shouldn't be racist. There's some policies that make sense. There's some policies that I'm not that crazy on. Said that the LGBT community, he wants them out of the military. I'm like, what for? They're citizens of the United States. If they're doing a good job, if they're worried about the medical costs, could they do some kind of a an agreement that if they join the military, that it's not going to cover that? I don't know. But I didn't think that was a good decision at all. That I thought that was terrible because, again, 14th Amendment of the Constitution is equal protection clause. All citizens are protected by the same laws and have the same opportunity.
But you don't see racism coming from the White House?
Again, I'm not in his heart. I'm not in his mind. I'd like to think not.
Okay. When it comes to Parcel 5, some listeners want to know, at this point in the process, do you support an RBTL's Performing Arts Center proposal that the mayor does and city council is going to have to verify and ratify? Where do you come down on that project?
I don't support it. If Eastman Theater, if the auditorium, if the War Memorial, if Jiva Theater, if Downstairs Cabaret, if they were sold out and, I mean, they were beyond capacity, I'd say, okay, there's a market for it, but there isn't. And I have my own plan for that anyway. So,
what's the plan then? What would you like for Parcel 5?
Well, I'll announce it on your show.
That's an invitation. Come back here. Mayor Michikay, will you come back and make that announcement here?
Of course.
Okay. But the bottom line is the RBTL proposal, you don't see a market for that.
No. And I would like to see anybody that's asking for public money to have skin in the game. And the person involved isn't putting any of his own money up. It's always OPM, other people's money. And I just can't see that. And this is, to me, this is kind of a payback for that person who is helping Lovely Warren's campaign.
Kathy in Rochester next. Go ahead, Kathy.
I want to appreciate you for caring, Tony, about the children of our district. I hear the caring in your voice. However, without recognizing systemic and structural racism, both inside of what's going on in all of our schools, and also having to do with immigrants. I worked with farmworker issues for 30 years. And when we talk about following laws, the 1986 Immigration Reform and Control Act put sanctions on employers who hired undocumented workers. To this date, I know of very few employers who are doing something very illegal, getting any kind of sanction on them. So when we think about that, who are the employers? They're white people. And who are the people that are being, you know, asked and pulled into our country to do the work that literally it's not about people not willing to do it. It's about how low the pay is. So we bring in desperate people and then we target them and say, you know, you're illegal, that you're the problem. But this has been supporting our economy for so long, and our governments knew about this.
Okay.
This is not, you know, this was just an unseen, invisible process because I saw it over and over again. I talked to those growers. I know what they were thinking. I need the next cheapest group.
Kathy,
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I want to thank you for the phone call. It's only because we're running out of time for the hour. Tony, I want to let him have a chance to respond. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I never said there wasn't racism. Absolutely. So let's set that aside. Second of all, if the law isn't being enforced, you have to go to the people who are in charge. And that's your mayor, your governor, your president. If they didn't enforce the law from 86, that's what you have to do. You should hold all elected officials accountable. No one is above the law. So let's go with that. And as a mayor, that's what I would do. I would follow the law. I can't speak for other people who didn't enforce the law 30 years ago.
20 seconds. Senator Ben Sasse says we're not preparing kids to be effective adults anymore, that the work ethic isn't there. Do you agree with that?
In some cases, yes. Yeah, it does exist because, you know, I'm around business people all the time and I hear from them that they don't show up for work or something like that. So, but it's not everybody. It's a few.
Tony for mayor. It's tonyformayor.org is the website for Tony Michikay, the Republican who is running for mayor of the city of Rochester. He's a Rochester native. He believes his bio gives him a unique opportunity to understand the problems of our community. And you heard him at length this hour on a number of issues. We're going to try to squeeze in one more round before the election in November when he'll be on the ballot. But if you're the mayor, I hope you keep coming back.
Thanks for the honor, Evans, and let me speak to the people. I really appreciate it.
Tony Michikay, tonyformayor.org. Short break, much more connections coming up.